This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host. And we turn now to the question of Europe, listening to the remarks by Xi Jinping at the Party Congress, the bellicose remarks, and what is to be done about a China that is posturing itself as inevitably taking over the planet for its version of peace. We welcome Teresa Fallon, director of the Center for Russia, Europe, Asia Studies. She is in Europe, and I go to a headline that is provocative from Bloomberg in these last days. NATO-China tension over Ukraine flares at conference in Iceland. Is that enough direction? NATO tense with China, represented by the Chinese ambassador to Iceland, at a conference about the Arctic nations, one of which is Russia, of course. This suggests to me that there's possibly a conversion experience underway, if it hasn't already happened. Europe seeing China in a new way. Europe seeing China as part of the problem, not part of the solution. Teresa, a very good day to you. Thank you very much. Do I generalize adequately? Has something happened in Europe where China is no longer regarded as a trading partner, but an adversary? Good evening.
Good evening, John. That's such a great question. And I think that this unscripted event that took place at NATO kind of telescopes the bigger issue that's going on. We saw with President Macron of France announced in 2019 that Europe was no longer naive about China. And that was when the EU-China document was first published. But it seems that with 27 EU member states, there's a variety of viewpoints, especially in regard to doing business with China. So we see the Central Eastern European member states, along with the Balts, see a strategic convergence with Russia and China interests. And so whereas the big Franco-German engine, for example, don't want to see China and Russia in the same basket. We saw that with their actions of watering down the statements for the NATO's strategic concepts. So both France and Germany wanted a weaker language on China in the NATO strategic concept. So we're seeing that Chancellor Scholz of Germany will be traveling to Beijing on November 3rd and 4th. Now, he's doing this not with the EU flag, but with the German flag. So there's a lot of pushback from other EU member states wondering why EU cannot speak with one voice on China. And this week, there's special meetings taking place in Brussels. The European External Action Service issued a non-paper, which was discussed and leaked to various news organizations, including the Financial Times, which reported on it. So they're taking a much harder position on China. And my analysis is that they're trying to beat Germany to the punch, because Germany is actually writing a China paper right now. They have a coalition government of three various groups. And so it's very difficult for them to get this paper published. And so in 2019, since Germany is the largest trade partner in Europe of China, and they have some key industries, for example, the car industry and the chemical industries are really dependent on trade with Germany, and they have kind of been captured by the Chinese market. So the Chinese kind of use them to advocate for their interests. It seems that they want to craft a China policy that maybe the rest of the EU will follow. So my analysis is that this week, these discussions on the new possible China policy will be far more strict. And so this will kind of beat Germany to the punch. Nevertheless, there is this move by Scholz to visit Beijing. Some people question the timing of this. He'll be the first G7 leader to go to Beijing after this big party congress in Beijing. And others have said, why didn't he just make a bilateral meeting with Xi Jinping on the sidelines of the G20, which will also take place next month? So he's kind of giving a lot of there's a great deal of concern, I would say, in some European capitals about Scholz's independent move and not doing it with the rest of the EU.
Gordon, you've watched the story of China and Europe for much longer than I have. Do you sense, as Teresa reports, that there is a shift by some of the states, the eastern states, the Baltics? Do you sense that that is significant and profound?
Well, certainly it's significant in certain portions of Europe. But as Teresa had points out, the European Union acts by consensus. And so, therefore, we do see shifting attitudes. It is reflecting in certain statements and certain actions. But nonetheless, I think the European Union is far behind where it needs to be.
You have a question for Teresa.
Teresa, going back to perhaps one of the most significant events in China-U.S. relation, China-Europe relations, the failure to actually implement the Comprehensive Agreement on Investment, which looked like it was going to be signed up in December of 2020. I assume that that's not going anywhere, but given the China's effectiveness in Europe, I very well may be wrong on that. Can you tell us the status of that important agreement and where you think that heralds China-Europe relations?
Thank you, Gordon. That's an excellent question. And this is something I think people should keep on their radar because it has been 2 years since these sanctions have been put in place. Listeners might not recall how Beijing responded with counter sanctions on the EU when they sanctioned four low-level officials in Xinjiang because of the reports about crimes against humanity in Xinjiang against the Uyghur population there. And so these sanctions covered every party inside the European Parliament, every member representing five different parties, the entire political and security committee, an entire German think tank. I mean, they were wide-ranging sanctions. I mean, over-the-top sanctions to teach Europe not to even consider putting sanctions on China, even if they're at a low level. So these have been in place now. So this definitively killed the Comprehensive Agreement on Investment because the European Parliament must pass it. So since they sanctioned members of the European Parliament, it's been in the deep freeze. But I've been watching this closely. And as of December 8th, if they do not reinstitute the sanctions, they will just no longer exist. And then China could say, well, since you didn't sanction us in the first place, everything should be fine and we can continue to barrel ahead with the Comprehensive Agreement on Investment. So this could be like a quiet submersion of these the original sanctions that happened way back on December 8th, 2 years ago. So I'm watching that closely. I've talked to people last week at the European Parliament about this, and some of them were appalled, saying, no, 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 this could not happen. This would be really bad, very bad optics. But I'm curious now because we saw in the past Germany some people have told me that, Hungary tends to be the go-to country for China if they want something blocked. And so the fact that they didn't block these sanctions originally, will they block them again this time? So they have to have unanimity, that everyone has to vote for this. And if they are not reintroduced, it will be like a quiet submission and then Kai will continue. So I think China has really lost a lot of influence in Europe, very similar to the U.S. with the recent Pew polls. In the U.S., 83% negative views on China. In Europe, I think the worst countries are France and Sweden, with 75% reported negative views of the PRC. So I think that even though politically, it might be difficult to do, there are captured elites, there's economic interests that are kind of wanting to continue good relations with China. So it's a mixed bag here, even though political discourse is getting tougher on China. But I think especially because of the Ukraine war, especially in the eastern part of Europe, they have seen Russia and China together. Another thing to watch for is this sub-regional grouping called the 16+1. Then it turned into the 17+1. It's a corridor between Europe and Russia that China, it's a land sea corridor starting in Greece, going all the way up to the Baltics. And so countries continue to leave. So they're voting with their feet. So now it's at 14 countries. Lithuania has left recently, along with Estonia and Latvia. So the next countries, two more countries I've been told are expected to leave in February. And so it will go down to 12 countries. So maybe the only lesson China has learned here is never to call a sub-regional grouping by a number, because then it becomes a barometer of how badly they're doing.
Teresa, China in Europe and its ambitions to sell to Europe, China is an export-dominated economy, it has been for many years. Has that been changed, that direction? Because China's turning inward. Is Europe looking for other supply chain routes than China, the way the U.S. is searching in the same fashion, friendshoring or onshoring, that sort of thing?
Well, the EEA, the European External Action Service paper, as reported in the press, was suggesting that they need to diversify. It's a taboo word here in Brussels to say decoupling. They're really against decoupling, but I think it makes strategic sense to do strategic decoupling in very key areas. But the problem is now that China has penetrated the market so much in Europe, for example, the port infrastructure, that they can use that as a form of leverage to get what they want. So as long as they've penetrated now ports, electricity grids in some countries, trade. If they're unhappy with how you're behaving, for example, with Lithuania, they can use economic coercion on them. So many countries are afraid to do anything, especially the smaller member states, to do anything that might upset China. Now, recently, the EU has drafted this type of anti-coercion mechanism, but we're unclear how that might work. And there needs to be solidarity among the rest of the EU member states, because Germany has so many investments in these Central Eastern European countries that make car parts that would affect German industry. Should the C+1, that number, just so we all know what we're talking about here, German business people are concerned that there might be some blowback on their own car industry. So we can see that even now, maybe some German industries will actually try to prevent Central Eastern European countries from leaving these Chinese mechanisms. So it's really becoming very complex landscape here in Europe in regard to Chinese influence operations.
Teresa Fallon, Director of the Center for Russia-Europe-Asia Studies. Gordon Chang, I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.